Cape Talk.
Call 021 446 0567.
Right, time to step into the garden with Kirsten Bosch senior horticulturist Cherise Viljoen, who is standing by to tackle any of your gardening questions. You can phone them through on 021 446 0567. Leave us a voice note on 072 567 1567. And you're also very welcome to use the email pippah@capetalk.co.za. Always lovely to have you with us, Cherise. Welcome back.
Thanks, Pippa, and what a lovely rainy day for the garden.
Well, I was going to ask you what's looking good in Kirstenbosch right now, and I guess you can't see very much because you're probably sitting under thick cloud. But were the cloud to lift, what would we be seeing, Cherise?
The proteas are all out, and they look beautiful. Really, you know, my heart flower. Beautiful. So the proteas are definitely coming into their own, and you can see them through the mist in all their different colours, and the birds are still on them despite the rain.
Okay.
Just lovely.
Okay, glad to hear it's looking beautiful. Cherise, last time you were with us, we took a call from a listener who was bemoaning the lack of bees in their garden. And we did say we would follow up, and I know you've done a bit of research today to talk to us a bit more about inviting and enticing bees back into our garden. We've had several conversations on the show about their huge importance to ecosystems. We know they play an absolutely crucial role as pollinators. And we also know that, unfortunately, human encroachment and interference in their sort of traditional movement corridors has meant that their habitat is under severe pressure. So let's be proactive today and talk about what we can do to make our gardens more bee friendly. What advice would you share with the audience?
Well, first of all, to say, I mean, she had 400 buttery avos, remember?
Yes, I do remember that.
Very concerned about where the bees had gone. But from about mid-June to mid-August, or even earlier in June, they start hibernating. They're just resting in their hives. They've made themselves enough honey. The weather is unpleasant. So it's important to know that it's nothing that you're doing wrong in your garden if you don't have bees during winter. They've gone into their hives to stay safe and warm. But one of the best things to plant is herbs. The sage family is very attractive to bees. And those are all the things we love in our culinary, delights as well. So sages are very popular. Thyme, rosemary, mints, lavender and plectranthus, although you can't eat plectranthus, it's a lovely winter flowering. Should any of the bees feel it's warm enough to venture out, then they would find plectranthus in flower and that would be able to feed them. Mm-hmm. And all salvia ornamentals as well, whether they are edible or not, they're just flowers in your garden. Any kind of daisy flower and anything belonging to the pea family. Beans, peas, chickpeas, alfalfa, even the licorice plant, which I've never seen growing, is very enticing to bees. And then indigenous-wise, that would be polygonas, acacias, and crotalarias. So lots and lots of plants you can put in your garden to support bees and your own family.
Cherise, the two things that stand out for me from that list is one is scent and the other is colour. Clearly, ways of attracting them into the garden are make it look beautiful to entice them over and give them a beautiful smell to bring them in. Will any sort of scented plant play that role?
Mostly, yes, although white flowered plants that are scented are often more attractive to moths.
Really?
But anything with colour and scent. And you're quite right, a lot of those plants are aromatic.
Mm. Okay, Cherise, thank you very much for those suggestions. And I hope that helps not only the owner of the avos, but also the rest of the Cape Talk listeners to attract more bees into their garden going forward. Although don't stress too much if you're not seeing a huge amount of activity right now. Cherise has explained that that is to be expected at this time of the year. With that, we're going to open the lines on 021 446 0567 for your general gardening questions. So please give us a shout if there's something you'd like to know. Cherise, maybe let's start with a WhatsApp from Kerry, who is very excited to be moving into her first home on the 1st of July. Congratulations, Kerry. She says we have a lot of work to do in what is a very small and brand new townhouse garden. I'd like to plant some trees right away that will be fast growing to grow up against the perimeter for some privacy. It's an afternoon sun area. Any suggestions?
In a small garden, going back to the Fabaceae, actually, the pea family, the Indigophoras make lovely indigenous small fast-growing trees.
Okay.
And that's one of my best recommendations in a small garden where you want some fast growth. Just always to be aware that any plant that grows really, really fast tends to have soft wood and is more prone to wind damage. So factor that in when you're going to the local nursery and asking for advice and then saying you want very fast growing trees.
Okay, thanks. That's a helpful addition to the conversation. So Indigofera, did you say?
I did.
Okay.
I don't have common names. You know I didn't.
I know. I'm just making sure I'm pronouncing it correctly, Charisse. Okay. Kerry, all the best in your new home. And I hope that those trees spring up in no time to give you the privacy that you're looking for. Enjoy the new garden. Similar query from Terence, who is wanting not to grow for privacy, but to cover an ugly vibracrete wall. Terence is looking for a creeper, also wants something that will grow quite fast, but he's aware that it mustn't get too heavy, so heavy to potentially pull the wall down. What would you recommend for Terence, Charisse?
If he likes, for me, it's all about color and scent. But if he likes yellow, the Senecio is a beautiful, fast-growing, succulent kind of creeper, but it doesn't cling. You need to put a trellis on.
Okay.
I love jasmine for color, and it's also quite fast-growing and hardy. Again, it needs a trellis. Anything that actually self-suckers can get quite heavy. So maybe it is worth, even if you just put fishing line between nails, that's all they need to weave themselves before. You know, through them, it doesn't have to be expensive. And then Podrania is a bit more delicate and an exotic, which I don't often recommend.
Okay.
But it's just beautiful. It has pink cup-shaped flowers. So pink, yellow, or white. The only one that's truly scented is the jasmine. And those three are some of my favorites.
Thanks for the advice. And Terence, hope one of those is suitable for your wall. Good luck with that. Okay, the next comment is, it's a comment rather than a question, but it is an important one. And I don't know if you can or want to expound on this, but Charisse, the comment is, please warn listeners about checking their gardens before bringing home a new puppy. We nearly lost ours after she chewed on a cycad. We had no idea it was poisonous to dogs. Now, you are the second person I've heard of that happening to. One of our fellow media people lost a dog last year under these kind of circumstances. Absolutely horrible incident of just not knowing that their garden was a danger to their new puppy. Charisse, is it something you've ever explored, or any advice that you'd add to what that listener said?
Absolutely. I mean, a few people know that agapanthus is poisonous if it's chewed on the leaf or the bulb, and lots of very innocent ornamental plants to us can be quite dangerous should something chew on them. And the idea would be to get a consultant in if you don't know all the plants in your garden, and to use Google. There are poisonous lists of plants on websites that are very interesting. And to just basically watch what, you don't have to pull everything out, but do be concerned or careful, or cordon off that plant till the dog is older. Make sure they have lots of chewies or are not in that area of the garden. Or if you're really worried, rather take the plant out, put it in a higher pot or on a table where they can't reach it. But it is well worth checking your plants to not lose, you know, a little creature that you've now given your heart away to. It's very sad.
It was absolutely tragic to watch our friends go through that. So, Charisse, I'll echo that. And thank you, whoever it was who raised that issue for us on the WhatsApp. It's a hugely important one. I'm sure most local vets would be willing to have a conversation as well, Charisse. When you're getting the puppy, you're no doubt going to a vet to get inoculations done, perhaps a microchip put in. I'm sure they'd be very open to having a conversation about, is there anything that I need to be aware of as well?
Absolutely. In fact, they probably have a plant list.
Probably.
They get asked, I'm sure they get asked this a lot, and it would be wise for them to be able to provide such a thing, or a link or a website that you can then just cross-check what you have in your garden with what could possibly cause damage to your animal.
Okay, thanks for that. Now, Carol raising a very interesting point, and Charisse, she wants to know whether you turn the soil at Kirsten Bosch, because she says, I was always taught that you should turn soil regularly to aerate it, but I've been told by several people recently that it is not a good idea and can actually be damaging to the garden. Any views on this? I've had guests before with very strong views on this, but I'm interested to hear how you're going to respond first, Charisse, and then I'll tell you what they said.
Well, we only turn soil when we're battling the weeds. Otherwise, we layer compost on top of our soil, unturned, and we plant within. So you dig your hole, but you do not turn. What is that word? Till. You do not till the soil. And that is because we've learned at Kirsten Bosch in particular, the fangles have very strong relationships with the mycorrhizae, yeah, the fungi and the bacteria in the soil. And they are meant to be underground, moist, warm, protected from UV light and open air. The minute we take what is supposed to be under and expose it up, we've killed the mycorrhizae that our plants need to survive. And in general, what should be below should stay below. So do not turn your soil. You know, it's something that farmers do. It's something we've always done. But as science progresses, so does our knowledge. So is our ability to test our soils and know what's best. So definitely do not turn your soil unless you absolutely have to. Rather ease your spade in and push a little left and right, wiggle it, make the hole and slide the plant in, or dig only up what you need to, and then revitalize what you've dug up by adding compost and then putting it back in, and cover bare soil. There is nothing worse than bare exposed soil. In nature, it would be covered by leaf litter and logs and weeds and fallen. Us raking our beds, I think I actually have a cadenza every time I see it.
Well, Charisse, if you can hear a noise in the background, it is the sound of Jane Griffiths, wherever she is, applauding what you've just said. Jane's Delicious Garden series, she was adamant on exactly what you've just said, that turning the soil exposes things to air and heat which are not meant to be exposed, and it is terribly detrimental to the long-term health of your soil and can actually lead to all kinds of additional problems like erosion and drainage, etc. So she's on the same page as you, singing from the same hymn book, and I hope, Carol, that that is enough to convince you to change your habits going forward. Thank you very much for asking the question. We're in conversation with Charisse Viljoen, Senior Horticulturist at Kirstenbosch Botanical Gardens. If you've got a question about your garden, you've got about 5 minutes in hand to give us a call on 021-446-0567. Otherwise, you can send us an SMS to 31567 or a WhatsApp to 072-567-1567. Okay, Charisse, the next question is an anonymous one from somebody wanting to get something growing between the pavers close to their swimming pool. Rather not grass, they're looking for some kind of ground cover, and it needs to be able to survive a lot of water due to splashing from the kids in summer, is the comment.
Some of the mints are really lovely. There's a little pennyroyal that creeps between. The only thing is they don't survive a lot of traffic. So you win with the water and between the paving, then you lose with the dogs and the children running all over it. There's something called Diamondia, which might like it a little drier. And there's the little violas. And there's something called, what is that weed again? Erigeron. I call it a weed because it will grow between the pavers. And it's absolutely lovely. And you can get all of these in 6-packs or 12-packs in your local nursery. So it was pennyroyal, it was Diamondia, it was Lasiospermum, and of course, as always, Papa, I forget the fourth one.
You said some violas and Erigeron. Erigeron, I said the last one. Okay. I'm really struggling with the pronunciations today. You're making me work for my, my living. Charisse, thanks for the advice. Good luck to the owner of that swimming pool. I hope that that sorts out the issue for you. Okay. Papa, yes.
I do just love the fact that people have spaces between their paving. Another, you know, soil conversation, then immediately you speak about water. And our solid surfaces waste the water that we could be storing in our soil bank in our gardens. So any gaps between your paving, just allow the water to penetrate. It's one of a wonderful water-wise way to manage water on your property, to not allow it to run off, to let it be absorbed into the soil. I would really encourage people, if you have the space that allows for it, to pop a brick every now and again, and rather put a plant in that space and allow all the water that would have been lost to you down a gutter or a stormwater drain or an out gutter from your property to rather get soaked into your soil. So well done to them for planting between their bricks.
Thanks for that, and thanks for that advice. It's a clever idea on just lifting a single brick here and there to allow a space where water can penetrate. Even though we're in the middle of winter and there's rain outside, Charisse, it goes without saying we still live in a water-scarce city and region, and just because it's raining now doesn't mean we don't have to stop being careful.
Exactly. Summer drought. Remember, summer drought, not winter rainfall. And it's simply those two words that can change your mindset. You start to prepare for the heat that you know is coming and the dryness.
Right. Our next question has come in as a voice note. Let's take a listen to that.
A lot of water due to splashing.
Hi. I want to know how to grow a oak tree. I've got two baby ones. And my soil is very sandy. Any advice? Thank you. Amin here.
Thanks, Amin. Any advice, Charisse?
they're actually very forgiving trees. Wherever you plant them or whichever pot you continue to put them in, just work some compost, a lot of compost into the soil, and continue to give them a lot of water. They're also quite thirsty. But they're quite tough when they're young in particular, and they are determined to do well, even though they are used to far richer soils and forest conditions. Oak trees are a lovely addition to a garden and in the Cape. So lots of compost, lots of water wherever you plant them, even in your sandy soil, and they will reward you.
Thank you so much. Okay, we can squeeze in one more call if you phone in very fast on 021-446-0567. In the meantime, though, we'll go to an SMS, and let me just have a look here. It is Brian, I think, who was asking about gazania seedlings, and he has spotted snails in the garden, and he knows that they are fond of gazanias. Is there anything that can be done to protect them?
I really like a product called Ferrimal. It's not kind to the snails, but it is kind to everything else in your garden. It is a very healthy product to use to eliminate snails. It contains phosphate, which causes them, they eat it as bait, and it causes them to stop feeding at all. But it does no damage to any of your plants or any of the other insects in your garden. And sometimes, if the snails are just overwhelming you, I do suggest Ferrimal. Otherwise, whenever it's damp weather, go out and hand collect. It's the best way to get rid of them quickly before they do something really horrendous to your gazanias.
And this is the perfect weather to be doing it in, Brian, so good luck to you. Okay, we'll squeeze in one last quick question from Kasim, who is on the line from Athlone. Kasim, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Papa. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. And you?
I'm great, thanks. Papa, a question for the lady.
Yeah.
We've got an apple tree that's been in our yard for about 30, 40 years, and it's been bearing quite well for, you know, it's like it's very temperamental sometimes, but it bears well. This season, though, the apples are smaller and very watery and crummy. I'd like to know if there's anything we can do, or has that horse bolted already?
Great, important question. If you're lucky enough to have an avo tree, you want to get the most out of it. Charisse, what do you read into those symptoms?
Kasim, it seems that you're quite right. Avos can be extremely temperamental, but I'm glad you've got a female tree, so you get fruit. I think it has something to do with the water and not water, and the horse is definitely bolted. It's too late to save these. But I would suggest feeding your tree. Go get a 315 fertilizer, and all along the root zone, which you've got to step quite a few steps, 5 to 8 steps away from the trunk of the tree, no matter what's underneath, will also enjoy it, and do quite a bit of fertilizing. I think somehow the avo trees are tired this year, and they need a little boost, and quite seldom do people think to fertilize them because they kind of just get on with it. So fertilize them, put on a compost mulch on the soil, and let's see if it does better next year. Kasim, won't you phone in and say if my advice did any good?
I will. I will definitely need your advice, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you so much, Kasim. I really hope it works. Well done. Thanks for the call. Charisse, I want to finish with a message of thanks in from Marlene, who's been listening, to say what a brilliant talk about gardening, especially that advice about the raking of leaves and leaving ground bare. It makes me quite mad. Thank you for all the amazing tips you've shared with us. You couldn't have said it better, but I'll echo it. Marlene and Charisse, thank you as always for being with us. We look forward to welcoming you again next month.
Well, Papa and Elaine and all the listeners, thank you so much. I love my 2030 questions. It keeps me on my toes. I'm bouncing around, trying to think fast on my feet. And if I'm hitting some nails on the head, that's fantastic.